engagement.
Hey, this one saves money.
Yeah.
Can't believe any of those.
What?
We don't see many of those.
Actually, all of them save money.
Do they?
Not very much. Excellent, thank you.
Senate File 459, Senator Berglund, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the division. The bills that we're going to be hearing this morning are a number of bills that are alternative ways to reduce expenditures in the budget. And the first one has to do with the Minnesota Veterans Homes, and it would be requiring the commissioner to maximize the use of Medicare Part D to pay for pharmacy costs. And obviously, we then get some federal funding to help pay for the pharmaceuticals. So, and the fiscal note is showing some savings in the neighborhood of $268,000. So, I'd be ready for any questions.
Madam Chair, this is kind of a unique situation. Is this with the Medicare Part D, this is something that we're not currently doing? And is it necessary that we have legislation directing this, or is this something that the commissioner has the ability to do on his or her own?
Well, Madam Chair, I think the commissioner could do it, but they had just started trying to work on this at one of their campuses. I think this would make sure that they're trying to do it at as many campuses as possible and would generate savings in the budget that otherwise probably wouldn't show up.
Any questions from the committee? We're on Senate File 459. Okay. Senator Berglund.
And I'd just like to set this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Senator Berglund, you have two other bills. Do you have a preference of their order?
No.
All right. We'll go with Senate File 696, patient-centered decision-making. Senator Berglund.
This is a bill that I believe I have an amendment for.
It's an amendment for Senate File 696. Senator Berglund has the A3 amendment.
And, Madam Chair, this would remove our state employee plan from using patient-centered decision-making. While I believe that this might have saved a job or two over in Senator Betzel's division, my understanding is that AFSCME believes this should be part of their negotiations on their health care benefits. So I'm removing it from the bill.
Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund.
So, Madam Chair and members of the division, this bill would require patient-centered decision-making to be included for certain procedures that where there are several options, they're equally effective for treatment. And patient-centered decision-making tools are on the internet as well as available through other mechanisms. There is training available for how to use the tools on the internet. And the way we usually get savings from this is once a patient knows that there are alternatives, oftentimes they'll choose the less invasive treatment, and that usually is less costly. And this is building on the reform that we passed last year. We did require patient-centered decision-making to be included in our medical homes, but of course we don't know how many providers will choose to be medical homes, so this would speed up the process of getting patient-centered decision-making into all of our public programs with all of our providers. I do note that the fiscal note has costs built into it in the first year that were not exactly explicitly called for in the bill, and so I think we'll have to take a close look at whether or not that is really necessary. Calling for an expanded role for the Health Services Advisory Council, which was not anticipated in the bill I introduced. But other than that, you can see that there would be savings as a result of this particular measure. And so I'd be ready for any questions that anyone has.
Questions from the committee. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berkley, can you just explain why the cost again? I don't understand why they.
If you look at the fiscal note, is anticipating that there needs to be trained providers and health plans. And so they're indicating that prior to implementation, that there would need to be an effective training program. And that DHS would want to monitor and ensure that patient centered decision making process is being used as required. Now, I understand monitoring because we are in this bill asking that the information be provided to the patient before they're referred to a surgeon or a specialist. But, you know, the testimony that we had in the policy committee from one of the folks at Health Partners that really has been an advocate of patient-centered decision-making said that he thought he knew about it. And he went on the internet and used the tools they have there to help teach you how to use patient-centered decision-making, and he said he learned a lot, more than he ever thought he would. And so, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how much training the department needs to do on this, but anyway, we'll tease this fiscal note out. And
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, I appreciate the work that you're doing in terms of trying to find savings and reform in our system, but I'm not certain that this is going to make much of a difference in Minnesota, where we have integrated systems already and where physicians already take patients through the decision-making process. And I'm really concerned, and I'm basically concerned about how this will make additional paperwork for the providers, or if they are trying to find on their computer screen the form that they need to use to navigate to make these decisions with their patients. And already we're taking time away from the patient and spending more and more time facing that computer or the paperwork that and all the signatures that are required or in order to start a process and get it going. And what we've been trying to do in our reform is to allow our physicians to have more time to spend with their patients rather than less time to spend with them. I think this works well in areas like Florida, where there are all these freestanding clinics, and where their interest is really in trying to have the most costly service. But in Minnesota, I think we have physicians that really offer the patients the choices that they need and walk through those decisions with them without having to have the encumbrance of a form in front of them.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Kretnersol, and I'm sorry, but I think that you think we're better than we are. Now, I'm going to tell you a personal story. Most of you know that my husband underwent prostate cancer treatment this summer. And he was referred to a urologist, and he was referred from a very integrated health plan. And once he was diagnosed as having cancer that needed to be treated, the urologist had a program within his office where he treated patients with freon therapy and gave us a brochure. We went home, looked at it. In the back of the little folder was this little page, and it said, they offer post-treatment therapy for incontinence and other side effects. And they had support groups for this. And I looked at this and I said to my husband, you know, if they have enough people that are having this trouble, that they have regular support groups, I'm thinking maybe we should look into some other options here. And we went back to our health plan and had to get referred to an oncologist who really treats people whose cancer is not, you know, it's a managing the care, not curing the cancer, in order to get referred to another treatment provider outside of the network that would provide an alternative kind of treatment. And we had to really work hard to get all that to happen. It was not automatically provided to the patient. And I just, I really believe that there are many other situations where people are not getting the alternative decisions presented to them in an unbiased scientific way. And, you know, this patient-centered decision-making, the tools can be provided in writing in the form of a pamphlet that can be mailed out to the patient before they make the visit if the provider chooses to do it that way. It can be provided on a laptop that they have in their office that the patient looks at while they're waiting for the visit to take place. It can be shown to them and discussed with a non-medical personnel if that's what the providers choose to do. You know, I think if we're concerned that this is taking more time in the office, it's time that should be taken.
Madam Chair. Senator Kretnersol.
Senator Berglund, it's the first time I'm looking at your amendment, but on lines 1.27 to 1.29, it says the interaction must be conducted by a healthcare provider or through the electronic use of decision aids, and that it must meet certain criteria.
Right, in the policy
Senator
committee,
Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Kretnersol, I don't know if you were there, but the night we heard this in the policy committee, they wanted to make sure that the decision aids met certain standards so that a provider just couldn't make up something and say this meets the criteria, that it had to be objective, scientific, vetted decision-making tools.
Senator Kretnersol.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, do you anticipate then the department is going to provide these different decision trees to the providers so that they can work through this?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Kretnersol, as I said, these are already available on the Internet, and these are patient-centered decision aids that have been approved by federally accredited bodies. So,
Madam Chair?
Senator Kretnersol.
I appreciate that, but the physician is not going to have time to be going through looking for each diagnosis that comes into their office unless they're cataloged for them and identified so that they can get to them quickly.
Well, maybe
Senator
that's
Berglund.
Part of what they've got in here that's costing money. I don't know.
I will just offer comment that we've our discussion seems to be most focused on the what the department's obligation or responsibility will be in this way of doing business. I think while that might be a component, I think equally important and one that hasn't been really hit head on is I think we are at a point in Minnesota with our healthcare reform that there needs to be a serious articulated discussion with our higher ed institutions in terms of what we are providing to our primary care providers, because clearly we are sending some very strong signals that we have some expectations, and there are different components to the healthcare reform that require and have a strong emphasis on those primary cares. And while patient-centered decision-making might not rest solely on your primary care provider, it's going to be an important part of that medical home thing. So I hope that the discussions that we have in health policy and in this division are somehow being transferred and translated over to our higher ed institutions. I hope that they're listening and watching and will be our partners in this, because we're gonna need that to be more successful. Other questions from the committee? Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. I'm looking at Section B here, lines 1.16, 17. The commissioner shall hold public forum and receive public comment prior to any changes. Not a lot of is this not? It's not rulemaking. Then we're specifying a list in statute.
Yes.
And then just turning it over to, well, to the department for maintenance, and they just have to have. I don't know. I mean, there might need to be a little bit of work on exactly how we turn it over to the department and the rules around maintaining that list. Just mechanics.
Senator Berglund.
Chair and Senator Lori. The idea here is that there might be, in the future, more procedures that have multiple equally effective choices, and this would allow them to continue to add to the list. And I believe that this would be done through the department's Health Services Advisory Council. They would vet the additional procedures at that point in time. So it isn't exactly rulemaking, but it is an open process that weighs pros and cons and uses scientific criteria. It has providers that work on that console.
Other questions from the committee? Sort of reminds me of the conversations many of us remember, the many times that Dr. Wood appeared with either Healthcare Access Commission or in this division or in health policy and talking about his work in cardiology. And the fact that he knows that for a good number of his patients, providing preventive treatment and some non-invasive options will serve that patient well, but our system isn't currently designed to sort of recognize or acknowledge that. And I think through the use of patient-centered decision-making, through the use of those medical homes, we are going to be able to turn that tide. Senator Prentner-Solon.
One last comment. Just because we have patient-centered decision-making doesn't mean that the patient will always choose the lowest-cost option, nor should that patient, because sometimes the lowest-cost option isn't the best choice for that patient. It needs to be the right treatment at the right time for the patient.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that comment, that's why I think this bill is important, because it makes the responsibility or the patient start okay, it's their illness, they have ownership with it, but now they have ownership on the decision making, and it is not the one silver bullet to healthcare reform, but it's part of the equation to start moving people to be aware, responsible, and cognizant of health, the continuum of care, and the direction that we need to go.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Berglund.
I'd just like to remind people that this was recommended out of two of the Healthcare Access Commission working groups that worked on healthcare reform the year before last. And some of the information that they had presented to them was that when patient-centered decision-making was used in 29 randomized control trials of 21 treatment decision aids, there were people were making decisions that they were more satisfied with, they felt more sure of, and that they had no different outcome than they would have if they had selected another treatment. And so I think this has had a lot of discussion, and yes, of course, every patient isn't going to choose the lowest cost option, but today many more patients are choosing the highest cost option without necessarily having any correlating benefit.
Senator Brettner-Solon.
And I certainly have no objection to patient-centered decision-making. I think that's very, very important as part of the process. I just think that much of it is going on, and I am very concerned about the additional paperwork or documentation that is necessary. Not that it shouldn't be done, but we do need to find ways to streamline this as much as possible.
Senator Brettner-Solon, on that note, and perhaps to Senator Berglund, I guess in my mind I was thinking that this concept is a process. It's part of your visit, if you will, and then I will be noting perhaps in your file or your chart that, you know, we had this discussion or we utilized patient-centered decision-making, X. We took the blood pressure, X. So I guess in my mind I haven't thought of this in terms of creating more forms or another office. I hope that I'm right on that. Have I missed something, Senator Berglund?
Yeah, I think it should be part of the office visit that someone discusses with the patient that they have seen the various options and they have made a decision, and there would be some discussion about that decision, and that there would just that would obviously be noted in their medical record.
Senator Brettner-Solon.
A true visit goes that a patient meets or a physician meets with a physician or a patient and they say, look, you have level 1 breast cancer. And, shoot, I'm sorry.
I usually do that.
You have these four options. Your chances of recurrence are 85% if you go this option, 65% if you go this option, and they go through each of the options. And the patient then has a chance to know what the choices are for them. And I think most physicians go through this process with their patient, but maybe they don't all.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, just in looking at the bill, it looks like what the doctor will be required to do is authorize that, or certify, I should say, that he's participated in the process. And the format for the certification and the process for coordinating the process is developed by the Minnesota Administrative Uniformity Committee, it says. So I'm not sure exactly, without having reference to those statutes, what that means or how much extra paperwork, if any, will be necessary because of that. But it looks like there's going to be this committee that will be deciding how much, if any, paperwork is going to be necessary. I mean, that's how I'm reading the bill anyway.
Senator Brettner-Solon.
Possibly, and I don't want to prolong this. I just, again, refer you to lines 1.27 to 1.29, which indicates the use of decision electronic decision aids, which to me indicates a tree. So if you make this decision, you go here. If you make this decision, you go here versus there. And
any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Senator Prettner-Solon, I don't read it that way. I just think this is just the next step in responsible illness management on the part of the patient and as far as the continuum of care that we're trying to get to in our market reform health care bill.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
I intend to support this. I just want us to be very, very careful about placing more documentation on our providers.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just lay this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. We will move on to Senate File 1402. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members, this legislation also is aimed at reducing unnecessary utilization of emergency rooms. This would apply to our managed care plans and our county-based purchasing plans. It would dedicate part of the withhold that we have for their payment to be based on reductions of emergency room use by public health plan patients. These are patients that have health insurance, I might add, and the idea would be to encourage the plans to institute mechanisms to get these folks to be using their primary care physician rather than the emergency room for their treatment when it really isn't necessary for them to be using the emergency room. And so the savings that would be generated in the bill would be as a result of either reducing emergency room use, which would then allow the state to actuarially reduce the health plan rates, or they would lose part of the withhold.
Questions from members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund. I'm not sure if we have all the details yet of the governor's proposal, but I'm just wondering in broad terms if you have information about how this plan, which encourages people to, you know, to use health care appropriately and in an appropriate location, differs from the governor's proposal of not paying for or not covering hospital services, and what the difference would be and how kind of that concept would be used in a practical sense.
Senator Berglund. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, if you're talking about the supplemental budget mm-hmm. proposal, I don't have the details on that. But I do know that, you know, the original governor's proposal eliminated over 113,000 people from coverage. And I believe that will end up having greater emergency room use for hospitals. The idea behind this is, you know, try not to eliminate people from coverage, but try to make sure when they have coverage that they're able to utilize the coverage more appropriately.
Questions from the committee? Senator Berglund.
So I'd like to just set this aside also for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
There being no further business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.